Podcast ni yokoso. Hello and welcome to the podcast. I'm author Teresa Santosky.
I am photographer Sid Caesar.
And I'm designer Dave Say. We are lucky enough to have the arguably the sexiest voice in radio with us today, Teresa Santosky, who, as she has said, is an author who has just released her book, Prayers for Opa?
Opa.
And
I'm happy to be back. Thank you for having me.
Thanks for agreeing to be here.
Yes.
So, what's today's date?
What is it? Today's Monday, February 3rd, 2014. We are back after a two-week hiatus.
Yep, we were busy. Which
Dave was Mr. Traveling Man.
And before that, you had something going on, too. Was it like an alumni thing, or?
What was I doing that Monday?
Or were you just being lazy?
I don't remember. No,
there was something that came up. I can't remember what it was.
I don't remember what it was now. Something. Well, maybe it wasn't as important as going to Austin for a week?
It was just for 3 or 4 days. Yeah. So we had a code retreat. I'm working on this this educational project for a UCLA research group through my cousin's company, Inquirium, which is a learning science consultancy.
Wow.
And so I'm the software architect for this virtual learning environment that they're putting together with a few research groups at UCLA. They're doing a 3D video tracking and using this technology to see where kids are in a play space. And the idea is to teach kindergartners, first graders, second graders science concepts that previously people thought they were too young to really grasp. But by having a giant playing space, they figure, like, go grab their attention off, and they could teach them some science concepts. Like, for example, states of matter, some systematic thinking, like A leads to B leads to C, therefore, you know, so forth. Stuff like that. So
wow.
It's kind of neat. So, but I live here on the East Coast, and Ben lives on the West Coast. And when I was trying to book some flights to Northern Cal, I usually fly Southwest. And they've drastically cut down on the number of flights that they have from Manchester that goes all the way to the West or that part of California.
Hmm.
You know, before you could maybe take two or three planes and get there, but for some reason you can only fly out on Tuesdays now.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
So we say, well, maybe we can go someplace else. Maybe we can go to Vegas or get a nice hotel there. And
the work would never get done.
Yeah. And plus, you know, it's kind of skeezy, right? What about Austin? Austin's kind of in the middle. And, you know, Ben had never been to Austin. I'd been there for South by Southwest Interactive, and I knew it a little bit. And so it might be nice to be in a cool town like Austin with all that co-working going on and all those young men wearing beards with their, like, young kids. It's a really young place. Like,
yeah. There's,
like, 20, 30-year-old, like, men and women going around doing their technology-type things.
Hipsters.
Hipsters, basically.
Damn, hipsters. Yeah. Austin's turned into Hipsterville.
Yeah, you know, PBR. On every menu.
Oh my gosh.
So one nice thing is we got to go to all these like different places to eat, and it's exciting just to have try different food. But yeah, so that's where I was last week. So
nice.
That's why I couldn't do the podcast.
Good.
You were doing something. Were you on a trip?
I had a shoot. I had a shoot that morning.
What was it?
It was a shoot here. There's a recording studio that's moved into the building.
Oh, right.
And they needed some shots of the space that they're in. They need some I guess they're working on their website, and so they just needed some environmental shots that are going in there.
Oh.
Excellent.
So, yeah, cool. I forgot the name of it. I met the guy that owns it. He used to have a really large recording studio in Boston. I can't remember all the people. He told me, like, I reacted because he told me he had worked a lot with Amy Mann.
Oh.
And he moved out to L.A. and opened the same, like, his company moved out to L.A. But he missed being back here, and he still wanted to have an East Coast branch. So they gave up the office they had in Boston, and they've moved it into our building on the top floor. Actually, where Studio 99 used to be, and then on the other side, the whole back side is theirs now.
Oh.
Excellent.
Yeah, so I don't know. I think they've originally they said they were doing everything but drums, but I guess a couple of Sundays ago when nobody was in the building, they did some drum tracks in there. So I just went in and got some shots of the owners like working behind the mixing desk and stuff like that they can populate their website with.
Nice.
Oh, very cool.
Yes.
So
what?
We should see what Teresa's up to.
Oh,
what are you
up to,
Teresa? And here I'm making all these gestures. I'm stuck.
What is it? What am I supposed to? Wait.
Well, in January, I had two very successful events for Prayers for Opa.
Excellent.
I had a book signing at the Toadstool Bookshop in Milford, which is a lovely place. They're very supportive of local authors, which is great. And I had a reading and an official release party at the Cozy Tea Cart in Brookline.
Oh, nice.
And since those two events, I've been working not only to get the word out about the book locally, but also internationally. And I'm making progress in South Korea, Taiwan, Hong Kong, the Philippines, and Malaysia. So slowly but surely, wow, the book is getting out to an international audience, which is fabulous.
So how long ago was the launch? It was
The launch party or the official publication date of the book?
In your mind, which feels like the real launch of things when you're out in the world exposed?
That would probably be the actual publication date of the book, which, depending on, you know, if you go with the print version or the electronic version, it was either October 31st or November 1st.
Mm. So it's been how many? So that makes it 3 months?
3 months?
More than 3 months.
Already. Wow.
Yeah.
That's fast.
Yeah.
What's it been like? Has it been exciting?
It's been very exciting, but also, you know, you're kind of learning how to juggle your promotional responsibilities around the clock since you're interacting with people in different time zones. And it's like, okay, I need to take care of the local emails first because those people go to bed at a certain time, and then I can focus on the international emails because, you know, once I go to bed, they'll be up and reading and responding. So
nice.
Yeah.
Have you been enjoying it?
I have been, yeah. It's been quite exciting to put the word out about the book and see the response that it's getting. You know, slowly but surely, I'm hearing back from people who are like, you know, wow, this is a great idea. And for anyone who's not familiar with the book, Prayers for Opa is a devotional for performers and their fans with a focus on the East Asian entertainment industry. So you can pray for performers and support them in the work that they're doing in the entertainment industry.
Hmm. That's very cool. Oh,
thank you.
So when you told us that you recently went to a concert in New York City to see...
I saw UKISS in New York City, and they're one of my favorite K-pop groups, Korean pop groups. Oh my goodness, that was an adventure.
Were you doing promotion for your book at the same time, or was this just something for you?
It was a combination of the two. I put together promotional packages of Prayers for Opa for each performer. So with pop groups in East Asia, they usually have a specific color that's associated with them.
Oh, really?
Huh. Like their fan group has a color, and that color is repeated in their merchandise and so forth.
Huh. Each member of the group?
Well, there are some groups where each member has their own color, and there are other groups that are just represented by a color.
It's okay. Like the Power Rangers.
Yes.
Yes.
Or Voltron.
A little bit, yeah. So UKISS's color is pink. So when I put together the promotional packages for them, I did... It's a zippered pouch with a pink band around the top, and each member of the group received a personalized copy of Prayers for Opa, an ink pen, a highlighter, sticky notes, you know, to aid in their study of the book.
Yep.
And also I included a press release with the general information, a letter explaining what it was, and the fabulous business cards that Sid designed for me. So, you know, being able to incorporate the color for the group, the pink color, just kind of made it more personal, I think.
Yeah,
that's great.
But the concert was the same time that the polar vortex hit the U.S. So that definitely made traveling, I would say, an unnecessarily exciting experience. Wow. There is no heat in South Station.
Oh, my goodness.
Well, there might be, but when the doors keep opening and closing, it certainly doesn't feel like it.
Yeah, I can imagine that. So also, walking along the sidewalks, that part of Boston is like this giant, it's like a wind tunnel.
Yes, exactly.
My sister used to describe walking like around South Station, and she used to live in Back Bay. And she said, like, at times, like, the wind would be so powerful, it would actually lift her off her feet, and people would have to catch her.
Wow.
Seriously?
Seriously.
That's crazy.
How
powerful the wind was.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
That's, my goodness. Lead shoes. Yeah. That'll help.
Yeah. Some point, those billowing jackets. It doesn't
Sails.
Yeah.
Wow.
So how did you get these packages to the musicians? Did they know in advance you were going to be dropping them off?
No. Typically, at East Asian pop concerts, they'll put out gift bins so that you can actually drop off gifts for the performers.
That's cool.
But
I want gift bins.
Everybody should have
my
a
life
gift
is not
bin.
Complete without people giving me gifts. It's amazing. Next art walk, I'm going to have a gift bin. So
yeah,
that's great.
Well, when I arrived at the concert, the gift bins had already been taken backstage. I just asked, I just asked around different members of the staff until I was able to connect with someone who was able to take the packages backstage for me. And that was wonderful that they were able to do that. So I'm hoping that perhaps I'll hear something in response to the packages over the next month or so, perhaps. Because from what I heard, none of the gifts that they received were actually opened in the U.S.
Everything
is being shipped back to South Korea.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
So we'll see. I'm excited to see what God is going to do in this situation.
That's great. Do they have, is it like a, was it just one of a few stops, or are they like doing a large tour? Or
UKIS did a U.S. tour with Mnet America, and they did shows in New York City, San Francisco, and Los Angeles.
Oh, wow, okay.
So, yeah, quite the... you know, that's a pretty good tour for an East Asian pop group who's, you know, just coming to the U.S. for a solo concert tour for the first time.
Yeah. Was it packed? Paint us a picture.
Let's see.
What was it like? What were you wearing?
Actually, I was wearing what I'm wearing today.
Really?
Yeah.
Did that blend in with the people there?
Somewhat. See, it's hard for me to respond to the packed question, because even though I was in the pit, I wasn't in the concert pit, you know. I wasn't, you know, down in the dumps.
I never thought you were a mosh pit kind of person, Teresa.
Oh,
it's all coming out.
I tend to stay away from the I guess the heart of the concert. They're laughing at me because I'm talking with my hands.
She was just showing us what she does in the mosh pit. She's just like gently pushing people away.
I would like to keep humanity at a safe distance. We can enjoy each other's company from this much feet.
Oh my gosh.
So it wasn't. So you were away from the writhing mass of humanity wriggling in front of the face, or was everyone like just very, I guess, behaved?
Well, the fans were very well behaved. There wasn't pushing or shoving or anything like that that I could see. But I was standing in the back of the pit, and I had a lot of space around me. Individually, there were a lot of people in the pit, but I was able to find a place where I could just kind of hang back and really enjoy the performance and also just kind of take everything in. I think that's kind of the writer in me that I like to be able to observe everything that's going on. And not just the show, but how people are responding to the show and reacting. I like to be that observer at the back.
So what did you observe? Are you writing an article on this? Will we be able to see something in the future?
I'm actually not doing an article on it, but...
But you did just do an article about being in New York. You had like your 9 or 10 tips. Yeah, I saw that.
Oh, okay.
Oh, thank you. I'm glad to hear you read that. I decided instead to write about the general experience of being in New York City and how you could really enjoy your time there. But that might not be a bad topic. You know, the whole, as we've been discussing before, going to an event or pursuing an interest that tends to attract a lot of younger people. And as someone who's older and enthusiastic about something,
yes,
having a different perspective and having different goals. Like, I'm not up at the front of the stage like, you know, "Opa, touch my hand," you know, kind of thing. It's like I'm at the back like, "Oh, okay, now I see how the choreography for this number comes together," and "Oh, this is how they're interacting with the fans. Oh, this is really fascinating." And then, "Oh, they're singing my favorite song. Yay!" You know, the range of responses.
So how would you describe the crowd that was around you? Was it, I imagine where you were people maybe of a somewhat like mind?
I would say so. There were some fans around me who were actually, you know, taking advantage of the back area to lean or sit down. Because you had a lot of people who were waiting in line outdoors in the polar vortex for hours.
Wow.
So I think by the time they got into the concert, it was like, "Oh my goodness, I'm warm. I can kind of take a bit of a rest and still enjoy the performance." But, you know, closer up to the stage, you know, you did have people who were holding up signs or waving glow sticks and, you know, kind of reaching out for the performers, hoping that, you know, they would get a high five or...
Right.
You know, some sort of connection with the group that they had come to see.
Interesting. Yeah. So did you feel overall comfortable where you were? Or was it kind of like, did you have to... when I'm in a place, like when there's a bunch of people who are much younger than I am, which tends to happen if I go to...
Austin.
That too. But there's lots of like old cranky looking people with mustaches too.
Yeah.
Not that I have a mustache, but he says like, you know, people in Austin are a lot more friendly than they are. They're interested in where you're from, and they like to say hi.
Yeah,
and it's different than here.
It's southern,
So we were renting a car, and they says, "Oh, where are you coming from?" And they kept asking questions about what we're doing, if they're, what their plans were. This was the first time in Austin, and they seemed genuine about it. They just want to know.
Yeah.
And this kept happening. Like, you're buying, you're at a grocery store, and you're buying something, and the checkout, the person's packing your groceries bags are asking you questions.
Talking
and asking, like, how your mom is, that kind of stuff.
It's amazing how much more personable the rest of the United States is, apart from the East Coast.
And you know what? New Hampshire, by comparison to where I was living before, which was... and Cambridge. New Hampshire is friendlier than that part of Cambridge that I was in. Because if you weren't local, you were no one.
Yeah. Well, when we drove across the country in 2002, and when I lived in North Carolina for a while, I mean, just the people were just so friendlier. They were just, they just wanted to talk.
Yeah.
And up here, it's like, you know, people just look down at their feet.
Yeah.
And they refuse to look at you.
It's true.
Yeah. Yeah, but they, when I go to tech events, there's this whole tech community that I like. That it's much more social. People are collaborating with making things, and they're forming these kind of groups of shared interests.
Yeah.
And these tend to be the younger people, people who have grown up more on the internet.
Yeah.
You know, so I'm at the, maybe the very... one of the older people who would have experienced the, you know, the birth of what the internet was and a little bit before that.
Ah.
And so all the community values, like, you, there's this idea of the hacker ethic. Information should be free. You know, but sharing what you know, you pulling together to make something wonderful, you know, together, you know. And that tends to be a younger crowd these days. And so when I go to these events, you know, everyone's like 10 or 15 years younger than me, or or like, or people think I'm someone's dad. it's more common. Well, maybe people aren't thinking that, but I'm just thinking that because I'm self-aware.
Yes,
I'm aware of like how much older I am and how much less energy that I have and things like that. So I'm trying to think of. Yeah, and also like when last time Therese was here, we're talking about the anime stuff. Like I'm an older anime fan.
Yeah,
And I'm probably a little bit weird about that. I was trying to show my cousin Ben in Austin, like Legend of Korra, and then like he said, "This is really kind of young. I don't feel like watching this." And I said, "Yeah, it is kind of young."
Yeah.
I still wanted to watch it, but
is he normally exposed to that sort of?
Well, he has young kids. I think his oldest is 9, so it's like 7 and 9, something like that.
I think that makes a difference too.
Yeah.
That if you have kids, that changes your perspective of entertainment and hobbies, because it's like, oh, that's something my kids and their friends would watch, as opposed to, oh, this is neat and I'm going to check it out because it's interesting regardless of age.
Yeah. I am happy to see that, I mean, this current generation of nerds who are having kids now. I mean, like, look at the Muirs. Like, they dress their kid up like Link from video games, you know? Like,
nice.
That's the one exciting thing about being at the age where you're ready to have kids now, is that nowadays people are not ashamed to celebrate their nerdity even with their kids, which is,
excellent.
I think, is just awesome. You know, like, I can't wait to have kids and just be like, you know, cartoons and comics and anime and video games and, like, look at all this awesome stuff.
Yeah.
I did that with my younger siblings. One Halloween, we dressed up my youngest brother as Naruto.
Oh, really? I was forced to watch the first 70 episodes of that, like, a few weeks ago.
Oh, gosh. I never saw the anime. I read the manga until it got very long and convoluted, and it was like,
long.
I just can't follow this anymore.
I have a client who really loves Naruto, and he's my age. He's like he's his 40s, and he said like, you should watch this. You got to get at least to, you know, this part because it's cool.
So, yeah.
So I'm up to like episode 24, and it's like taking so
full
long.
Season. Yeah.
It's like, oh.
Yeah,
and it's like each 30-minute episode is about 22 minutes of content, plus like the 3-minute song in the beginning, and then like the 3-minute song at the end.
Yes.
And then they have one thing that happens.
Yes.
It's told through multiple flashbacks. It's like Barney.
Yeah.
Let's describe the setup again for this ninja attack. Again!
Yeah.
And again!
Yeah.
And again! And let's come back for the commercial break, and let's replay the last 15 seconds you just saw!
It's hard nowadays when people like recommend something to you, and then they're like, well, you know, the first season was just sort of like, it gets really good like in like halfway through the second season.
Yeah.
Like, you should really stick with it. I'm like, well, it's like 26 hours of like trying to give it a shot until the good stuff starts to have. I'm like, yeah, so, I don't know about that.
So I was mentioning, like, I'm finding a hard time getting into this, Carl. I said, stick with it to episode 70. And I'm going,
episode 70.
And it kind of got cool, but, you know, I was so tired by then, I couldn't really appreciate it.
Oh,
so, anyway, there's like another like 600 episodes.
That's crazy. I should do that with my work. I should be like, no, you'll like my work. Just hang in there until you get to about image 1,000.
And then this is why when you put together your portfolio, you pick 10.
Yes, exactly.
And do you make that the arc?
Yeah.
Oh. Anyway. Wow.
But I digress. So, you know, finding age appropriate nerdity.
Yes.
I wonder if that's something I need to worry about at all. You know,
I don't know. I have a good age appropriate. So. I went to a concert one time where the demographic was much, much younger than me.
Justin Bieber concert?
No, I went to a Spice Girls concert.
Really?
Yes. And it was right after Ginger Spice left the band, which I was devastated.
Oh,
wow.
And you want to talk about an awkward situation. Like that was practically like a To Catch a Predator kind of thing. Like it was fascinating because the amount of little tiny people whose parents let them dress like Baby Spice. Like,
wow.
It was creepy.
I must admit, I'm not familiar with the
Spice Girls?
I'm looking it up right now.
What?
Keep going.
Oh, my Lord. That was like the girl band of the 90s, the pop. And they all had personas. You had Scary Spice and Sporty Spice and Ginger Spice and
Posh.
And Posh Spice, Victoria Beckham. And the concert itself was atrocious. They came out, I think, and they did 3 songs, and then they had to take a break.
Really?
Oh. Yeah, and the whole thing was just these giant video screens about how the concert was sponsored by L'Oreal and all.
Goodness.
And I remember it not being very long. I was when I was working at Newbery Comics, and we were friends with the label rep, and she called and wanted to know if we wanted tickets, and it was like an automatic yes, just to see. Like it wasn't we weren't even fans. It was just like we have to see what a Spice Girls concert was like.
So how did you approach it? Did you go in did you feel like I need to dress for this part, or do you sign?
No, because you can't, because you cannot be a guy at a Spice Girls concert, especially like I was 24, 25, 26, something like that. You can't be that age at a Spice Girls concert without, like, no matter what you wear, people are going to look at you like there's something wrong with you.
What was the average age of the Spice Girl.
They were all, I mean, jeez, what, not, that was...
Were they all like teeny boppers?
Yeah, they were all like 11, like
what?
From like 6 to, you know, like, I don't even know. They were just young. It was just young. And really young girls, and it was parents, but it was just like some of the stuff that these girls were wearing. It's like you wanted to walk up and slap the parents and be like, you let your kid wear this like out in public with a bunch of other children dressed the same.
Uh-huh.
You know, it's like any minute now, like Detective Stabler is going to come like walking in and start arresting half, like every male that's in this, watching this. It's just crazy. It was crazy. But it was fascinating to watch how that pop, that like just total like fabricated pop thing works. You know, it's like they came out, they sang and danced, I think they might have even lip synced, they did 3 songs, and then they were like, we're gonna take a break now, and then they like they leave the stage, and it's like 20 bathroom. Minutes of commercials, and then they come out and they do another couple of songs, and then this they have to horrible. Go do a wardrobe change, and it was just like what's going on here.
Yeah,
it was bizarre.
I can't believe the music's playing already.
I know.
There's
so much we had to talk about.
Yeah, so I guess we'll have to wait. Save some of this for next time. Hopefully there's a next time.
Yes.
And let's do there's a few quick announcements I guess we could do.
Like, okay.
Ethan's video is coming out.
Yeah, I'm working next week. Last week and this week we've been editing a video we shot about 4 months ago.
Yep.
I'm a co-editor as well as the person that shot it. And it's
exciting.
It's very exciting. So I'm editing it tomorrow, and I think it will be ready shortly after that. Tomorrow's the last day of editing, I think.
Cool. Teresa, you got anything that you want to announce?
Yeah.
Well, my humor column is going to be in this Thursday's Encore section in the Telegraph.
Cool.
And it's about why I am not allowed to use matches, even though I'm a grown-up.
Excellent. Looking forward to it. We're going to start releasing these podcasts on Wednesday, which will give us a couple of days just to write show notes and process the file.
Yes.
So I'm rushing to get it all done on Monday.
Yes.
Let's see. What else? Happy Chinese New Year.
Happy Chinese New Year.
Happy year
Groundhog's
of the
Day. Happy Groundhog Day resolutions, which we didn't get to talk about.
No.
But we can talk about next time.
Yes.
I guess that's about it. Yeah.
Walk us out, Dave.
All right. So this is Dave Say, designer.
I am photographer Sid Caesar.
And I'm author Teresa Santosky.
And thanks for spending the time with us.
Yes, we'll see you guys next week.
Music by
Michael Bellar and the Azaz Ensemble. Give him your love at michaelbellar.com. Yeah!
Huh, we've never let this part go uninterrupted before.
Kentakoga, 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 Kentakoga. We're going to make him listen to the very end before he gets his... Every week he's just like, I listened to your podcast and I didn't hear you say my name. So we just sneak it in at the very end.
Oh, right. I forgot.
Kentakoga. Kentakoga.
I guess I need to stop this from recording now.